Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner.
And I'm Leah Gilmore. And I'm still Leah Gilmore.
And you are still Leah Gilmore. And we want to welcome you back to Cultural Crossroads.
Right.
On our way there, I want to remind you, though, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. It's not just a bank. It's a credit union. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. www.mecu.com, or you can just go up to steinershow.org and click on their banner. All the information is there. Remember, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, mecu.com.
There you go.
There we go.
All righty.
Credit unions are a good thing.
Oh, yeah. I'm a firm believer. That's where all my tens of dollars are.
Your tens of tens of dollars.
Yes, my tens and tens of dollars that I make doing all this amazing work.
Okay. You know?
So how exciting is it today that we are debuting Cultural Crossroads?
And why don't you talk about what our vision is, or what your vision is, Ms. Gilmore? I mean, I think that the idea we talked about with Cultural Crossroads is highlighting Baltimore artists, artists from around the country, people
right.
from communities across the city, across mm-hmm. the state, across the nation, across the globe,
right.
crossing cultural pathways, crossing together and kind of creating this thing out of the African-American world, the African diaspora, out of Scotland, out of Wales,
right.
out of mm-hmm. Appalachia, out of Native American world, the Latino world, across the globe.
That's right.
Working and talking together.
Right. Exactly. And this, the intersections of those worlds, you know, what we have in common and how our diversity makes us so much stronger. So I think I'm really excited about getting the opportunity to meet and talk with so many different artists, musicians, and advocates who are really focusing their art on making this world a better place. So that's what Cultural Crossroads is all about, is really exposing those folks who are using their art or whatever, you know, their vocal abilities, their oratorial, or, you know, they may be great orators
mm-hmm.
to make
it.
A better life. Can I get an amen?
Amen. Amen. Yes, you can. And so we're going to do a lot of that over the coming months
right.
in many ways. And
yes, because I'm on my way to Siberia. And
less than two weeks,
with a boys' choir that's going to be singing black gospel music, so that's pretty exciting.
I know, I love
that. That's Cultural Crossroads,
and we'll be talking with you from Siberia.
Yes, you will be. So, if I'll be able to talk, you know, that jet lag is.
You'll talk. It'll be fine.
I'll be speaking in Russian.
So, all right, we'll see that. So, in the studio with us, we have Fanon Hill, who's co-founder and executive director of the Youth Resiliency Project, Navasha Daya, who's co-founder and director of the Healing and Performing Arts. And Navasha and Fanon, good to have you here with us.
Welcome.
Thank you for the invitation. What an honor to be in the presence of Queen Mother Leah Gilmore.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you. It is my honor.
These are two of the most powerful people that I have ever seriously met. And you know, Mark, we've met a lot of folks. But as far as dedication to our children, all of our children, the art, and just cool folks, good peeps, Navasha and Fanon are just incredible, and I'm really excited they're going to share their youth resiliency initiative with us. And first, honey, mm-hmm. just let me talk about Navasha for 1 second.
You may.
This child can sing. And if Baltimore remembers a group called Fertile Ground, I mean, I used to sit there on the side. You know, you did Artscape a lot, and I would be on that hill, and I would just wait for, and I would go, who is this woman? You know, because I love singers, because I'm a singer,
yeah.
you know. And really, she is one of the most phenomenal singers, and she's Baltimore's own, but she travels all around the world.
Just like you.
Yeah, just like me.
Well, maybe you both can do something down there.
I hope so. One day, mm-hmm. to, you know, we can
Why
get
one
together.
Day? I mean today.
Today. We're here to talk about the Youth Resiliency Project.
We can do both, can't we?
Well, you should hear this woman sing.
Well, let's work on that
seriously.
Before the end. Don't you think, Fanon?
Let's do it.
So
okay.
Well, first, when I first met Fanon, and then we'll start mm-hmm. talking about this project, I remember meeting him at a cafe, and we were talking with some other people
mm-hmm.
and introduced to one another. And I knew immediately that he came from a home that had some social and political consciousness.
That's right.
Because the Fanon name
That's
doesn't
right.
come easily.
That's right.
Right?
That's right.
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So he's the second person I know named Fanon.
Yeah, it's a great name, isn't it? It really is
Franz
indicative.
Franz Fanon Walker's the other one who owns Really Raw Honey.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and here we have Fanon. So,
yeah.
So let's talk about these projects. Should we start off with a piece? Yeah, the queued up. Let's play this.
That's good.
And then this is, why don't you introduce it for us, Fanon? Or Navasha.
This is our youth from the Youth Resiliency Institute. Mm-hmm. It's our Soweto 76 choir. They recorded in a professional studio, mm-hmm. and this is one of the songs that I taught them.
Great.
Kosi Sikeleli Africa, Malupaka Yisu Pandawayo, Yiswa Imitanda Zoyetu, Kosi Sikelela China, Nusapawayo, Kosi Sikeleli Africa. Malupaka nisu pandawayo, iswa imitandazo yetu, kosi sikelela china lusapawayo,
woza moya
sikelela kosi sikele,
woza moya
sikelela kosi sikele, woza moya.
Spellbounding. Spellbounding.
That's the South African national anthem.
Right.
Zulu version.
Zulu version.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it was amazing. It sounded amazing.
It sounded like they were in South Africa singing.
Oh,
and these are Baltimore children.
Right. Yes. That's right.
From Cherry Hill, correct?
Well, we work with youth all around the city. Uh-huh. So it was a mixture of youth from age, some of them were kind of young, maybe 8 to mm-hmm. 22 is in this recording.
It's just absolutely mm-hmm. wonderful. And so this is part of what you do it with the Youth Resiliency Institute. So Fanon, why don't you tell us more about
Sure, absolutely. Well, the Youth Resiliency Institute was established in 2010. We're incubated under Fusion Partnerships, Inc. Mm-hmm. Now, you want to talk about some amazing social justice activists and change agents. You know, Sister Strongheart, sending a shout out mm-hmm. to you, a shout out to Polly Rhythms.
We love
you. You know, we share a daughter.
Share a daughter, that's right. That's right. And, you know, respect to all the other Fusion programs, but, you know, Fusion Partnerships really levels the playing field by allowing those here in Baltimore City who need to do the work, who must do the work, to immediately do the work. And so much love to Fusion Partnerships, Inc. But once again, we were established in 2010, and we're co-founded by I'm a co-founder. Navasha Deya is a co-founder, as well as two young people whom we've mentored for a number of years, Shadea Allen, fierce organizer, and Brother Richard Williams, fierce organizer. So we wanted Youth Voice to be integrated from the ground up in our programming. And, you know, we really stress academics, so we're proud of both Shadea and Richard. Shadea is in the midst of starting school at Coppin, which is why she's not here today. You know, you
is
have
this
to get a good start.
Year?
This is her second year, and we always, with all the young people, one of the most, powerful, profound acts that a young person, specifically of color in Baltimore City, can make is getting an education or learning mm-hmm. a trade, joining a union. Mm-hmm. And so we stress that.
And our organization, basically, we provide cultural arts programming, training, an array of services to youth, children, family, and adults around Baltimore City. And we have a lot of different programs that we have under the Youth Resiliency Institute. So
right. And I'm resiliency. That's such a strong word, you know. Yes. Why did you choose the word resiliency?
I think, you know, resiliency can best be summed up by the eloquence of poet Lucille Clifton, who once proclaimed, "Come and celebrate with me that every day something has tried to kill me and fail." One more time, I love Lucille Clifton. Mm-hmm. "Come and celebrate with me that every day something has tried to kill me and fail." And when working with young people, predominantly children of color, of African descent in Baltimore City, you know, the resilience that children of color, you know, exercise every day in the face of dehumanizing policy and incidents, you know, we really wanted to celebrate their resiliency. And prior to relocating to Baltimore, I was a Troy Martin Youth Development Youth Resiliency Fellow at Case Western Reserve University. And it was one of the most profound opportunities or experiences I ever had. So I jumped head in within the field of resilience theory. And so here we are today celebrating the resilience of healthy communities, healthy adults, healthy young people who are, you know, on the front line and oftentimes have do not get their due. You know, pictures are painted of young people in Baltimore City. And those pictures really deem young people as second-class citizens, you know, almost like refugees. Wherever I go throughout the United States, Canada, Hawaii, everyone wants to know about black youth in Baltimore City. You know, how are they able to tenaciously and deal with the day-to-day violence that's inflicted upon them?
So how does it play out in the work you're doing? I mean, I think that there's a because resiliency with young people, especially in poor neighborhoods, can come about a number of ways. I mean, there's resiliency just survival, just getting through the day to be able to get through what you have to do what you have to do, whether or not you are a success by the standards that we paint standards by in society. But there's also resiliency in terms of the power that comes with that politically and socially.
Most definitely. You know, one thing within resilience theory that's very powerful and that I want everyone to understand as, you know, Navash and I and our young people move forward in promoting resilience theory is the notion, the idea of protective factors. So there are protective factors that young people employ to get them, you know, through life day by day throughout Baltimore City and beyond. So one of the things we do within the Youth Resiliency Institute is we have been mapping protective factors that black youth use. So resilience theory is an asset-based theory. You know, once again, it aligns with the history, the lineage of, you know, us as people of African descent, you know, having coming from enslaved Africans and the fact that we're still here today. I'm on the microphone today, you know, when my great-great-grandfather was an enslaved African in Alabama. That's my great-uncles never wanted to go back to Alabama after they relocated to Cleveland, Ohio, you know, just the terrorism that they faced. So the fact that we're here today even having this conversation really speaks to the importance of resiliency, but protective factors. So one thing that we're going to be doing in the upcoming years, we're going to be mapping these protective factors, and we're constructing a blog site where, you know, neighborhood by neighborhood, we celebrate community protocol and etiquette and the protective factors that exist in various communities in Baltimore City. So we don't want to give too much away now. Stay tuned.
But I think it's great. I was reading about you really stress civic leadership. I would love to talk to you about two things. One, you're both artists. So you understand that from a certain perspective. But you have the Baltimore Youth Guardian movement and where it says youth grow up in communities, not just programs.
That's right.
Yes.
That to me is so, so powerful because we so often try to throw programs at our underserved youth. And our underserved youth usually look like us, African-Americans. And so what do you mean by growing up in a community? That's how we grew up, you know, the whole village concept. Are you trying to recreate that?
Definitely. We do a lot of on-site programming. So for instance, this summer we were in Cherry Hill Public Homes. It's our third year there. The first year we did it with no private or public funding. And then this last 2 years, we've had funding from the N.E. Casey Foundation. And when we're there, we're teaching about Cherry Hill, the heroes and sheroes in Cherry Hill. We teach them self-determination. They're being trained to be cultural organizers. And the Baltimore Youth Garden Movement is any youth that we work with are part of that movement. And we're always teaching resiliency theory, as well as Kuchichagulia self-determination and learning how to organize the people through your understanding of who you are. So if you understand who you are, then you can understand anyone else, connect with them, and you're empowered, and you're confident, and you're resilient. And not in just surviving, but because you can get through any obstacle, and you're learning how to do that.
So I'm curious how this work that you're going to be doing in this resiliency project with young people, how it melds the culture and the political and social activism. How does that meld?
Well, you know, first of all, we're in Baltimore, so let's start in Baltimore, you know, a city where, you know, black children, youth, and young adults are far often represented as outside local and national imagery and therefore as field citizens. You know, this preoccupation with black youth, children, and young adults, you know, this irrational preoccupation with imagery, distorted, desecrated imagery of black youth, it is tearing Baltimore City apart. It is impeding the ability of Baltimore City to prosper. So it's an issue that all of us are going to face, have to face, whether we want to or not. But the idea, the whole practice of being self-determined and understanding who you are, being connected with the struggles, not just of people of color, you know, throughout the United States, but Native Americans, you know, first world nation, indigenous folk who are here, you know, our Latino brothers and sisters. I never forget being invited to speak. And I was speaking in front of maybe about 50 artists, and I posed the question, you know, who knows who Jose Ruiz is? And no one could respond. You know, this Puerto Rican brother who moved to Baltimore and worked with people of color, you know, Koreans, founded Eblo. But here we were, no, there we were in 2011. No one could speak his name. So that really speaks to the importance of just culture in terms of the way that culture can expand frameworks of civic engagement. You know, freedom is won by more than placards, and foundations often fund programs that are involved in protest-oriented type of endeavors. But there are other forms of civic engagement, other forms of moving forward in a way where black children, youth, and young adults are able to expand notions of civic engagement, you know, throughout the city. Very passionate about this because it's not spoken a lot, spoken about a lot or very often in Baltimore City. And it's something that is, once again, really impeding our ability to prosper.
I agree. I think we actually met over our common passions about this on how to empower youth beyond the traditional protests, because the arts are an amazing way to teach youth, you know, to empower youth and to let youth know our history, to know their history. When I know how fabulous I am and how resilient the people are I come from, I am less likely to think less of myself. And that's the bottom line. I mean, and I so admire what you do and the commitment by which you do it. Now, when you look at the arts scene here in Baltimore as artists and even dealing with youth, African-American youth, there seems to be some schisms here and there. Have you run into the schisms? If you can define them for yourselves, the segregation that does still exist and persist here in the city in the arts.
You know, personally, just last week I was walking past a newspaper box and saw an image of the amazingly talented Dan Deacon on the front page of a newspaper with the tagline of the newspaper's tagline. It says something to the effect of putting Baltimore's music scene on the map. And I said, wow, you know, he's very talented, but so was and is Precise Science, a hip-hop group. When I go to, just in Canada, speaking to some African-Canadians, and they were asking about Precise Science, Fertile Ground, you know, Son of None, Comrade, Chris Goodman, amazing organizer,
Mark
who's
Evans.
An amazing, exactly. So, you know, you go throughout the world, throughout the United States, and people know the Baltimore art scene, but then we come back home, And where are we?
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know, so I say all that to articulate the fact that personally I do believe and feel that Baltimore's arts community is poisoned by inequity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a serious issue that needs to be dealt with. And in our work within the Youth Resiliency Institute, within our work within culturally, our work is cultural organizing. We're developing structures to deal with this and address it.
I mean, I think that, folks, mm-hmm. by the way, we're here talking with Fanon Hill and the Vachadaya, they're co-founders of the Youth Resiliency Project.
Institute.
Did I say a project? I mean institute.
I have been studying in my head, institute.
And of course, and Navash is also a director of the Healing and Performing Arts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dealing, yeah, right. That's it. There you go.
So I had that right. Yeah. You want to mess it up twice. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join us in this conversation. Leah Gilmore and I here at this Cultural Crossroads talking with Fanon Hill and Navash Adaya. And I, you know, what you all were just talking about, there's this, because there's a, Baltimore has a way to go, and I can see things changing.
Mm-hmm.
But there, because we look at culture in very specific ways,
mm-hmm.
right? And culture in the city has been defined a lot by upper class white culture.
Correct.
Right,
yeah.
Correct. Right.
Or defined by people who are upper class and white, I should say, in this community, as in many communities. But you see that, I mean, there's a transformation happening. I mean, there's a transformation happening when you see Kwame Kwe Arma is now the artistic director of Center Stage, who's already changing things by having Baltimore actors for the first time in Center Stage's productions, Baltimore actors in those productions. Mm-hmm. That never happened before.
Black and white actors
in his productions. Where he's going to be bringing, that is, he said, if there are not working class and poor people involved in theater in Baltimore on the Center Stage, then I've failed my job, he says.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
You know,
right.
And that also this idea of, because hip-hop and culture from the street out in the black world hasn't been seen as culture. And I have my hands up, like in quotes.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, that's part of
Or it's been seen as a type of culture that is not equitable, which to me is even more dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
It's still culture, but it's the exotic culture that those people create, you know. But I think what we're trying to do and what this Cultural Crossroads addresses and Fanon and Navasha and Mark and so many other people who care so deeply about these issues is that to make an equity across culture. You know, that the grassroots and the grass tops, none of this is superior. Mozart is as fabulous as the wonderful Mark Evans, who I said before, who sings, you know. All these things are equitable. And I think unless we have the dialogue that is direct for non, if you can address, unless we have a direct and open and honest and consistent dialogue, I think this thing stays the same. I love Center Stage. But Center Stage is part of the grass top of culture here in Baltimore. What I always like to think about, what I'm thinking about now are all the brilliant artists who no one has heard of, who create absolutely amazing art, like the gentleman whose front is covered with glass. I can't remember his name. It's just beautiful art in West Baltimore.
Druid Hill.
Lives near Joyce Scott. What do you think we could do better at the grassroots to make it a little more visible?
Well, you know, that's a great question. Recently, the Youth Resiliency Institute, we partnered with the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore, and we had a Youth Arts Harvest Festival. We wanted to celebrate artistic traditions, diverse artistic traditions. We invited Korean artists. We invited Filipino artists. We invited African artists. Mm-hmm. You know, here we are in Baltimore City, and there's a very vibrant African and West Indian community.
Yes.
So we said, hey, let's have this conversation, this artistic conversation, and really forward some concepts and begin to work around or on some of these themes related to equity or inequity in Baltimore's arts community. And we specifically wanted to work with young people. You know, you can't talk about cultural sustainability without having young people in the dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
And racial inequity is too important an issue for young people not to be involved. You know, so we moved forward with this Youth Arts Harvest Festival. We didn't know how many people were going to show, and show up. It turned out to be one of the most populated, one of the most well-attended.
Well, yeah, talk about that. Before we have to break, talk about that.
It's exciting.
Oh, it was so awesome. So we had youth from age 6, actually, to 23 that were performing. So youth, children, youth, and young adults who were performing. instrumentalists, guitar, you know, drummers, guitarists, singers, mm-hmm. dancers, performing. I did a duet with one of my voice students, my guitar player in my band. It's my Jewish brother, Mark. Mm-hmm. Matthew. He performed with his students, and we just showcased this talent, and they were so excited. They were excited. We had an intergenerational jam at the end with my big brother, Kelly Bell, and myself on keys. Mm-hmm. I was playing synth bass, by the way, my debut, and some other adults and youth on instruments and singing. It was awesome, and they felt good, and they felt confident. They felt like they were professional musicians, and they had an opportunity to be showcased.
And they were
excited mm-hmm. about the cross-cultural. The parents commented to us and sent us emails about how excited that their children were exposed to different cultures and different youth from different parts of Baltimore. You have privileged and non-privileged children there from different races. It was amazing. And so we're looking forward to doing this in the future. Again, this is the first annual Youth Arts Harvest Festival, and we plan to do this again in the future.
Where was awesome. It?
This was purposely in Hopkins Plaza downtown. You know, we hear so much about crazy black youth, you know, crazy Latino youth, crazy youth downtown. So we wanted to give folk a chance to see the other side of the story. You know,
which is most of the story.
Right. It's a great story. While also, you know, inviting those young people who may live in a Roland Park, who may not be familiar with the school-to-prison pipeline and how that affects all of Baltimore, to have an opportunity to dialogue with a hip-hop artist such as Bones, mm-hmm. who has, you know, friends who are incarcerated. So they don't see it as something foreign to them.
Yes.
They say, wait a minute, this is an advocacy movement that I want to take ownership of so we can really begin to move forward and address these issues and be victorious.
Mm-hmm. So before we have to break, I just talk a bit more about where you want to take this resiliency movement. Where do you think it's
going to
go?
Okay. It's spoken by Mark Steiner.
The way you describe it, sounds like a movement to me.
That's right. Fanon and Navasha by themselves are a movement.
You know, we're standing on the shoulders of an Alvin K. Brunson, Brother Ernest Shaw, Woundwork, Sankofa, folk who have been doing the work for
Tell
years.
Tell it now. That's
and,
right.
And, you know, we're saying, look, you know, our children are beautiful of all colors. We love Baltimore City. Mm-hmm. So we're going to keep on moving, jumping, and grooving until we get the work done. And, you know, we believe in collective impact strategy. That is, how do we pool our resources? You know, how do we utilize UJAMA, cooperative economics, or UJIMA, collective work and responsibility, mm-hmm. to affect change in Baltimore City? If we're an organization that receives less than $5,000 a year in funding, then we're going to redefine philanthropy.
Yes.
You know, philanthropy is going to be more about collective work and responsibility. Hey, brother, you may be in West Baltimore or Southern Park Heights. You have something that we could use over here in East Baltimore. I have something you could use in where you're at. So let's put everything in the pot.
Right.
Let's mix it up. Let's turn the fire up high and let's get this work done.
That's right.
And it's teaching
Amen.
True community. I was talking to one of my elders and she said, back in the day, you know, you just gave. Now we're a little more selfish. Mm-hmm. So even philanthropy is not just giving money, it's giving your time, your abilities. So it's kind of almost going back to the old way of connecting heart to heart and seeing people for their spirit and who they are and actually be an example of that. Because sometimes you have to ease people out of another paradigm. Mm-hmm. We've been
right,
in this interesting
definitely.
Paradigm for a long time.
Right.
So you're kind of, you know, kind of easing them in there and gently nudging so we can have, you know, everyone could be resilient and successful.
And philanthropy is not just, you know, the million-dollar givers. I think
That's
we've
right.
talked about that.
That's
you know,
right.
it's really, I love the Kujikalaka.
Kujichagulia.
Yeah. Well, your mojo is very much my thing,
That's
you
right.
know. That's
Unity.
Very much my thing. So where are you based before we have to go? Because I know we have to go.
All around the city.
We're citywide. We were just in working with Reverend Willie Ray, you know, a community
Marcus.
Activist
yeah.
who
West
Baltimore.
A long time.
Who a lot of people discount. You know, when I first came to Baltimore, everyone said, you know, Reverend Ray, you know, stay away from him. Reverend Ray, he's insane. You know, and from my experiences, I run towards those people who are deemed as insane because
exactly.
they
right.
must be doing the work.
That's
so
right.
we just, you know.
Well, Mark and I, you come to the right place.
So we just had a block party this past Saturday right. where we practiced self-determination, collected school surprise. With Save Another Youth Inc., worked with the Land of Kush and community members were able to have a vegan soul food
they
meal.
Didn't even know.
So we're citywide. We're citywide.
Mm-hmm. So you should let us know as things happen so we can promote them on the air and get people to join you and,
oh,
yes.
absolutely.
And be there and see what
Thank
kind of collaborations
you.
We
yeah.
can create
right.
as we
All
go
right,
along
yeah.
that line.
Yeah.
Oh,
this
yeah.
has been great. So I know we both want to thank you, Fanon Hill. co-founder and executive director of the Youth Resiliency Institute.
There
got that
go.
Right
yeah.
this time.
Yeah.
And Navasha Daya, co-founder and director of the Healing and Performing Arts. Great to have you both here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for
it
the
was
invitation.
Wonderful.
Take a very brief break, and we'll be right back with Kalima Young, a project coordinator for the Baltimore Art and Justice Project. We'll be right back.
All right.